I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
In this edition of Skin On Talks, we caught up with director Billy O'Brien to talk about his new film, I'm Not a Serial Killer, ahead of its release at the Irish Film Festival London and in cinemas on December 9th.
So I got off the tube and I'm at Regent Park, so it's very handy. I feel like a Cold War spy sitting here on a park bench on a freezing cold morning, but it's quiet, that's the main thing. But tonight should be good crack. Anyway, we've got Laura Fraser and Carol Geary are coming down. As an actor, I think you're very vulnerable because, you know, you finish the shoot and you think, well, I did a good job in that, but then you don't know what the director and the editor got up to. And, you know, I was the same with Christopher Lloyd in Texas, South by Southwest Festival. He was very nervous beforehand, you know, and he was delighted with the film, which is great, but it was very funny because he was very, you know, even he was sitting two seats away from me in the cinema and I could see his look of slight apprehension, you know, on his face. Because, you know, it could turn out to be the worst film ever, even if you're old and it's really good. So, you know, he can stand or anyway.
Yeah, well, and if you make a Terrence Malick film, you're never entirely sure if you'll actually make it or not, is it?
Yeah, that's true. How many got left on the sidelines in Red Light? Jesus, yeah. Very true. Yeah.
And you have someone like Christopher. You know,
yeah, exactly. I'm not going to leave him in the sidelines. No. Sure. Yeah. But I noticed, like, I've been going to all the festivals all over Europe mostly, and, you know, I did all that 10 years ago as well. But now, every time you do a festival, you get another little bump in all the tweets and everything. So it does help the momentum keep going, you know. So I've been really pleased with that, but it makes it worthwhile to do it that way, I think.
Well, that's it. It keeps it in the conscience. It can be difficult.
Yeah.
You have a nice window just before Rogue One comes in now, you know, to spoil everybody's party.
Yeah. I know. I'm still from Bulldog, you know, in the UK, and you're saying, yeah, it's like it's actually 24 days because we come out on the Friday and it's Wednesday, the following Wednesday, and, you know, so
yeah.
that's a juggernaut, really, you know.
Well, you see, the thing is, it offers a sort of counterpoint to that because they say you don't want to go into a big, massive space off-racket, but rather see something quieter and darker and, you know, with a story, then you'll have that.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of counter-programming done that way, you know.
That is true. I mean, I just, you know, talking about like the problem, I think, is that even the art house cinemas are showing it because it's a cash cow, you know, for all of them. So they'll have, like, you know, they'll have small films like my film in a couple of screens, but they'll also have Rogue One on. They just cannot afford to not have it, you know. But look, as you say, it's counter programming, and we're going to be in a small number of screens anyway, so I think hopefully people will seek us out. That's my only hope at this stage. And I think ours is kind of an old fashioned platform release, and that we're not hitting all the screens on the first day. We're hoping to go through a lot of the independents in the UK, so, and I think the same in Ireland, so it's not going to be all balanced on the first weekend. We're hoping to continue over Christmas. That's also gives you a chance to build word of mouth a bit. So, yeah.
It allows a slow burn, which, I mean, given the subject matter and the nature of your film, a slow burn is exactly what suits it, you know?
The question mark for all of us is in the current, you know, in the difference of the industry with DVD kind of gone, can it still do the slow burn and survive? So that's what we're going to find out.
It's a different sort of film, and it's a very rewarding watch. It's a neo-noir thing wrapped in a supernatural, well, ending, but...
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with the subject matter, if you're not familiar with the books, it can be a little jarring, but no.
Well, you see, that was interesting, because in editing, I mean, look, you know, this is actually to be careful with spoilers and all this stuff anyway, but, I mean, in editing, we were very aware not to give away too much on the supernatural side, because what we didn't want was the audience getting so far ahead of us, I got bored. So we tried to pull back on and personally, I hate long expositional speeches in films. You know, it's really dull for both me and the audience. So we tried to kind of play it just subtly and, you know, perhaps went too subtle. I don't know. And it's actually another thing for seeing it in the cinema, I think, because when, you know, a lot of our shots are quite point of view. And when it's up big, you're looking at small things within the frame rather than it being right close to you or somebody telling you it. So you do have to pay attention, I think, in parts of it to see the supernatural stuff. But there's no doubt it is subtle until the very end. You know, I quite like the controversy, shall we say. It gets people talking anyway, you know.
Well, that's good. And seeing it with an audience when it happens, then you have that, you know, that different reaction. I mean, genre films always play better with an audience than on their own. So it's...
Absolutely, yeah. Because, moments work very well in a crowd, the humor comes through, because in a film like this where you're not sure if you're meant to laugh or not at points in it, in an audience, if you hear other people laughing, you kind of go, all right, I've got permission to laugh. And we talked about that a lot in editing, about how we can set that up early on so that people know there is a kind of surround of black humor in there that you're allowed to laugh to. Because I think, in one sense, horror has gone quite monochrome. You know, I think kind of maybe Blumhouse and people like that have kind of put it in a little box. And for me, coming from where I come from, it's a lot broader church. You know, I like sort of cult and odd films as well, where you can laugh and you can jump and, you know, be scared at the same time. And I think that makes it richer, you know, so it's quite interesting. And I love being in cinema watching an audience. I was in Sitges in Spain, you know, the festival there. And the Spanish seem to love, I mean, this is definitely a spoiler, so I'd say, but anyway, they love monsters and all that. And basically, at that point in the film, they literally cheered and whistled and you know, clapped and everything. I couldn't get over it. And then I saw that A Monster Calls, like, it's the biggest selling Spanish film ever.
Yeah.
They obviously have something in their psyche about it, you know. That's been quite interesting, going to each country with the film in different Cork last week now. Definitely people come into me and they love the humour. There's very Irish like humour about that, I think, you know.
How did you end up in Minnesota, though? How did that come about?
Well, basically, the book, it's in a funny one, right? It goes right back to the book, the English edition of the book, by headline. Dan Wells says it's in North Dakota.
Yeah.
Now, when he got published in America with Tor, they said to remove, it was only mentioned once in the book, I think, to remove it and just make it a little more vague. So he did, but it just so happened I'd read it. So the minute I picked up the book, it's in the first chapter that John talks about being in this small town of Clayton in North Dakota. It immediately set it in a kind of Fargo type setting. And then, you know, it is set Midwest, wherever it's set. So we started looking, Robbie, Nick and myself, for the kind of perfect place. And we went to Michigan first because Nick Ryan had done a short film. Linky did another film where he wrote the name, but in Detroit, so he had contacts there. So it made sense to go there and do a test. So that was our first date. And then we recce'd Ohio. I did on my own province, Manitoba, in Canada. And they're all similar in a way, because they're all kind of Midwest prairie type states. And then with Minnesota, it just ended up that one of our financiers had a music studio in Minneapolis. So it made a good base for us to go over to. And then I found the town of Virginia, kind of hippie, up near the Canadian border in this range of low hills called the Iron Ranges, where they do all their iron mining. And so they were mining towns, and they just looked fantastic with the kind of neon signs and the old bars. So many bars, because of the miners. And it looked really 1970s. I just felt like the town had. Because it was like 6 years to get the thing off the ground, so we did a lot of trips to America to try and look at it. Each financier sort of had their favorite state and their favorite tax deal. So, you know, Ohio was one of the people. And then, as I say, we ended up in Minnesota.
Yeah, because you have Robbie, who just went for 16 mil, then you have an old-school 70s look as well as having the feel from the town.
Yeah, that was an interesting evolution, because we were always going to do film. I love film, and Robbie loves film. But we shot the test on 35 mil with anamorphics, and it had a kind of very Spielbergian look to it. And then time went on, we were just, Robbie in particular drove the 16 mil. I hadn't shot 16 in film school. And then we looked at it again. I thought, actually, you know, it's a really good 16 on the face. It sort of has an inner glow to it. Plus, it's grittier than anamorphics, which are very glossy. So it sort of fits the kind of paint peeling, blue collar feel to the film that we want. So it's good. The other advantage was a small little camera, and it was very fast, so it's very handy. Plus, they're very robust, you know, shooting at minus 20. No electronics to break down on you or anything, you know, you keep going. They're like an old tractor, you know. Because, I mean, look, there's always the lure of the new, and digital is great, it has its uses, but I think it's a shame to forget about what has worked for so long and has a very cinematic feel to it. You know, I always think, you're 10%, as a director, 10% out of the box immediately, sort of ahead of the game when you shoot on film, because you've immediately set a tone to it that you have to work harder at with digital, because digital's a bit antiseptic, you know, so this gives you a bit of a head, and anything that gives you a head start is handy.
Well, that's the thing, if in the rushes you can already see the mood without having to, you know, put a layer on top of it.
Look, there's hardly any grading, you know, in 16, it's just a bit of balancing, that's it, the look is there, you know, and it's great, so it's like when you look through the ground glass, through the lens, same look that you remember. I must admit, I get a bit kind of perplexed with digital when I'm in there, and it's all milky they're going, oh, right, well, can we try blue? Can we try red? And it just gets, whereas this is sort of puts back in the hands of the cameraman, you know, what he said on the day is what you get. Now, you can't change it, but, like, if it looks great out of the box, why would you, you know? So that makes it simpler for me.
And then when you have one of the best cinematographers around, you kind of trust what you
yeah,
got.
Yeah, exactly. But we have plenty of rows about it. I mean, you know, ever since we were in Dunleary in film school, you know, headstrong Irish people standing in a minus 20 with different crew looking on going, what the hell is going on here? It's funny. But he's come, like, since I started working with him, Robbie, like, the amount of directors he's worked with now, particularly Andrea, you know, he's from when we, I think Isolation was his second or third film, and my first, from there, where we were really two kids, to now, it just destroyed me that the film he's made, you know, fantastic.
You know, it is. I mean, we've seen a rise of a lot of Irish cinematographers and directors, you know, recently. We've seen an awful lot of them now become household names almost within the industry, which is really, it's really great to see.
Yeah, because 3 years it was kind of, you know, and I remember, I think, it was like 3 years it was Jimmy Sheridan and Neil Jordan were kind of it, you know, maybe Tyler Sullivan as well. And I remember even Neil Jordan, or one of them said something about 10 years ago, saying that they were sick of that, whereas the next generation, and suddenly, with a vengeance, there's the next generation. And I think it's fantastic to see all the success at the Oscars and everything, with Brooklyn and Room, and, you know, it's gracious. It opens out the landscape, and also means that the kind of traditional Irish film, which there's still plenty of room for, but now it means you can just be an Irish director and tell good stories wherever they are. You know, I think that's a great film.
Well, that's exactly true. If you look at Brooklyn, Room, and yourselves, and Tomato Red as well, they've all been filming in America, you know, or in Canada as well.
Yeah.
But telling Irish stories, or telling a story with an Irish slant, you know.
Yeah. Now, we'd also, when Dan Wells, the writer's book, when he gave us the option, you know, very good of him, he immediately said, "You're Irish. Do you want to reset it in Ireland?" And I was kind of horrified. I could see his point, because it's a story about a kid in a small town, and, you know, I don't know what if it's in Cork, could have said it there. But for me, it was so soaked in a kind of Midwest Americana that you just had to do it in America, you know. And I think there was an excitement between Robbie and myself and Nick as well. Like, all of us in Ireland, putting up on a lot of American films, to actually be in America on location, doing a film. And when we were back in, we both looked at an egg in Dublin, and Aza and Patrick are in South Dublin. Patrick is actually from America, but they like they said, after years of doing sound design of Ford Fiesta in the rain, it was made to do V8 Cadillacs in there, you know, in the snow, you know, sounds and that. They're still sick of doing rain.
And how did Dan take it then when you, because you made changes to his book?
Big changes. I was like kind of holding my breath. And sure enough, there were a couple of controversial ones. The whole church scene, the whole funeral scene again, spoilers if you haven't seen the film, but that isn't in the book. The book ends sort of during the night, if you like. And so Dan had a problem with that. And I tried to explain in an email why we've done that. And then when he saw the film in Texas, he actually came out with it. It's been a draft that's been about 8 or 9 or 10 years.
Posters have been amazing.
Oh, well, the poster. Oh, well, you see, no, there you have sort of some very strong, opinionated. like Robbie, me and Nick, we all like fight over the posters so much. So we had, it was a sort of Sail Vision poster that came out, the one on the lake, the cracks in the lake forming the shape of the monster. And then I felt that gave too much away. Then we did one for Southwest, which is quite like an American indie one with Max coming out of the steam on the street. And then Robbie commissioned this wonderful poster designer in LA called Midnight Marauder, or Marauder, I can't pronounce the word. He does ones for like Terrence Malick and for Rob Zombie and does all the Criterion Collection ones. And Robbie's shooting the Noah Baumbach film and the producer mentions about him. So he commissioned him to this incredible poster. It's the one with Max's face, like a photocopy.
Yeah, I love that one. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just so out there, you know. So that was great. And then my neighbour, David Wyatt, is this wonderful English illustrator, does tons of children's books and everything. And I'd always had an idea that, you know, you could really do, I'm not a serial killer, as a French comic book, you know, the band Destiny, like the Tintin ones or whatever, you know, you could see it as a hardback comic book. So I sort of doodled something for him and he came up with this beautiful, I don't know if you've seen it, but an illustrated poster looking out of John's window. And we put every character in the film outside his window in the house and so on. So you've got the whole story of the film in the poster. Anyway, that was great fun, you know, and we're really pleased now with the latest one, the UK one as well. It's a very striking image of Max, you know, that just came out of the blue, really, from Bulldog. We didn't expect that. So I think we've been very lucky because in my career, you see, I don't know if people know, but you don't really get much say over posters. It's like book covers with novelists. It's up to this whoever has the rights. They do the poster, and they'll involve you, and they won't involve you, depending how they're feeling, really, you know. So I remember with Isolation, there were some horrendous posters out there, you know. But with this, I think we've been really lucky. We've pushed it, and we've got a sort of great collection. And what you're saying about the publicity of it, we didn't really think about that as we were doing it. We just wanted to, it felt, the film was so sort of personal to all of us that we felt we wanted to get good posters out. And it has had on a good knock-on effect that it's been another way of people noticing us.
And yeah, and also then genre fans love putting them on their walls. So if you create an iconic poster, then it stays around. And then you get some, because I mean, Dan's written more books, so you get a clamor for more of this, you know?
Yeah.
So, which would be very cool because no Irish film has ever gotten a sequel. So.
Ah, okay. I thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't my right foot, my left foot.
Or tapping too, re-tapping it.
In one sense, it has to be kind of a massive bestseller to. Or not a bestseller, a sort of a really good box office for people automatic to go, we have to